From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 28th day of April, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. A bit later in the program, we'll check the weather forecast not once, but twice, actually three different times through the half hour. We'll check in with what the National Weather Service has to say, what Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey has to say, and as we close out our time together, Eric Snodgrass from Agrible will have a big, broad picture for us. And along the way, we'll also check in on that cattle market. It's been really pretty hot. I've got some information from yesterday afternoon's recording of Commodity Week with Chip Nellinger and Greg Ginder. If you can stay with us for the second half hour of today's program, by the way, the whole Commodity Week program will be there for you to listen to. It's already up on the website. You can do that at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world on a Friday afternoon. It's the 28th day of April, the last trading day of the month, and we're joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Mike, I bet you were hoping for a higher day as we closed out the month. Just didn't happen today.
No, but we did get back the technical support in the wheat chart, and we had talked about that last Friday. We had lost that 412 area for the March lows in the soft red wheat at that point last Friday, Todd, and we were able to get that back today on a closing basis, and I think that's very, very important from a standpoint of the wheat at the end of the week starting to turn and go higher. And turn and go higher from a standpoint of not only seeing good weekly exports throughout the week, both in terms of inspections and also export sales yesterday, but also the trade is acknowledging some potential damage in the hard red wheat belt as we get ready to start that wheat quality tour next week. And some are putting that damage at around 10%. That seems to be what the news wires are probably looking at and promoting, or at least putting out to people that subscribe. That was something that Bloomberg and I had talked about today. And so I think the trade is starting to respect more of the weather and the wheat. We did not get that in the corn, though. I think that's a wait-and-see attitude in the corn market to see exactly whether the European model is right and Decatur, Illinois gets 4 inches of rain in the next 72 hours, or whether the GFS model is right and it gets 8.5 to 9 inches of rain. That's what the difference is right now after the noon updates. And so it's a Harry Truman type show me mindset, I think, when it comes to the trade, especially in light of this week's news with NAFTA.
Yeah, so we had the news with NAFTA. Let me turn back to the wheat market, because it may not be done, actually, with the cold weather in your part of the world, and that would impact wheat. Do you see any problems going forward, or are we just going to get the assessment from the Wheat Quality Tour? And I'll try to catch up, folks, with that next week, although I'll be traveling to Washington, D.C. for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and getting everything done while I'm there and getting on the air. That may be a trick in itself, but we'll try to get DC and what's happening on the Wheat Quality Tour going on. Although, just for those who are listening, I will post into the website folks that are on the Wheat Quality Tour, so you can follow them on willag.org. I'll post a list of them into my Twitter account.
There are a couple nights this weekend where places like Goodland, Kansas, for instance, are looking at lows of 32 and highs of only 33 would be Saturday, Sunday, Monday time frame, based upon the latest model updates. And that would be temperatures that would come in before an expected 6 to 7 inches of snow that the latest model is reflecting. So if that would happen, Todd, I think, yes, as advanced as the crop seems to be west of me, it is probably likely that a little bit more damage could be accumulated. The other piece of the puzzle here that I think is even more important is that it's not just the United States. We've got a northern hemisphere problem in terms of European wheat. And the French ratings came out Friday morning. This morning they came in at 78% good to excellent. That was down from 85% last week. So a big drop in good to excellent conditions. And they too have more colder, drier weather on the way from the latest updates that I've seen. So I think it's nice that it is a more global wheat supply weather issue than just isolated in one specific location.
Yeah, nice, meaning there might be a lift in a wheat market that actually has 1 billion bushels in carryover, which is an extraordinarily large number in the United States.
Nice, yes. Nice from a standpoint that many people didn't realize that Paris milling wheat made a new 5 or 6 week high this week, while we languished around at new contract lows or near contract lows. This market today, and the way the funds love to spread so that they reduce their risk and reduce their margin exposure, has allowed them to play one against the other. And what I'd really like to see, and I think we're getting closer, as long as we don't see something like a disruption in NAFTA or some major trade issue come around the corner and that we're not expecting, I think we are getting closer to the idea that we're getting low enough in price, we're getting tighter in supplies, demand is holding in there very nicely. And that means that maybe we will start to unwind some of this spread mindset and psychology that really we've had for the last 3 or 4 years.
We've spent some time on this, but you and many of our analysts, other analysts, also maintain that wheat can often lead the grains and the oil seeds higher if there's going to be a real change in the marketplace.
I think it has to. And I think this week we saw it, and it's just what the analysis suggests. And you know, it's something that I've worked on for the past couple of years, and it continues to prove itself out correctly. But just this week, we saw the wheat and the soft red go lower than 50 cents a bushel on the spread in terms of a premium versus lead month corn. It just throws it back into the feed category, and that by default hurts it. There's a lot more analysis out there too from people like the Federal Reserve and other more high-powered analytical firms than someone like me that also talks about the relationship with the dollar and the wheat market and how that's it's on the front line of trade issues. That's all we can say about it. It's just the way it is. It's the canary in the commodity coal mine, as I like to say.
Speaking of the canary in the commodity coal mine, last week on Friday, the cattle on feed figures were released. By all accounts, most people looked at them and thought, oh, this is not going to be the best in the world for the marketplace, and there must be a black hole somewhere that is swallowing up animals because the market, at least at the CME Group, has been really moving higher. Is that based on the cash side of the market or something else?
I think there's only one word for it and one acronym, and that's NAFTA. And I think this would be borne out in the latest update from USDA and their livestock, dairy, and poultry. They've got some very good analysis from a standpoint of Mexican feeder cattle imports that we bring in from Mexico and fat cattle imports that we bring in from cattle. It's almost like the NAFTA trade is buy cattle and sell hogs, because our biggest export market is Mexico, our biggest, and that's the pork side, our biggest import market that we bring material in is feeders and fats from both Canada and Mexico. And I think when you know, Sean Spicer, the president's press secretary, came out yesterday after a day and a half of talking about it and trading it, he said, quote, "We will move forward with NAFTA termination if the negotiations and renegotiations that we're going to go through between us three countries are decided not to be fair for U.S. trade." And I think that's as simple as it gets, because I was one of those people that I think even on your air talked about the cattle on feed being very negative for the on feed number being so much above the trade expectations. And we did see a sharp break in the market first of the week, but then we started talking NAFTA termination again, and the livestock traders really took hold of it. Feeders went up $10.00 a hundred this week, and that's about 7.2%. I'm starting to accrue puts now, bought puts again in the feeders, and I'm going to start in fats as well. I think one thing the trade must understand, I think, at this stage is that if you're going to see corn turn around on heavier than expected precip, be careful of being long feeders here, because they've really wound that spread out, buying the feeders, selling the corn as of this week.
So let me make sure I have this and summarize it correctly. Basically, if NAFTA is terminated, part of the trade that would not happen is the feeder cattle coming across the border from Mexico into the United States, fats maybe too?
Exactly. And I think this is where the cash market, to answer your question from before, I think the cash market's getting scared that it may happen. They're locking up supplies that they think could be a lot tighter if we do lose that supply from across the border. So the futures moved, and then the cash got off their hind end, so to speak, and started to move as well late in the week with a 132, 136 being traded versus last week and this week. And I think that's a NAFTA-related trade at this point. There's a fear out there that the supplies will become a lot more dear if NAFTA gets terminated.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you being with us for the day.
My pleasure, Todd, and have everybody watch that dollar Brazilian real. It's the end of the month, and it looked like it may be triggering a buy sign, so that signal could be negative for the beans as we go into the month of May.
Will do.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist for the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois' Prairie Research Institute. This week has seen temperatures close to normal for this time of year in Illinois with widespread rains. Areas to the north of Interstate 70 saw rainfall amounts of 1/2 to 1.5 inches for the week ending on Friday morning. Areas south of Interstate 70 have received between 2 and 4 inches. The big weather story is the expected heavy rainfall across Illinois this weekend as a strong low-pressure system moves slowly across the state. The heaviest rainfall amounts through Monday are expected to be in a wide band extending from St. Louis to Kankakee and are on the order of 5 to 7 inches. Much of the rest of the state can expect 3 to 5 inches. Only the northwest corner escapes with less than 2 inches of rain. These rains will be falling on soils that are already quite wet, leading to widespread flooding of small rivers, streams, farm fields, roads, and basements. In fact, the National Weather Service has most of Illinois in some stage of flood watches or warnings. Stay tuned to your local forecasts as the situation develops. For temperatures, we can expect highs in the 40s and 50s in the north and the 60s and 70s in central Illinois and in the 70s and 80s in southern Illinois over the next week. Overnight lows will be in the 40s and 50s in central and southern Illinois and in the upper 30s and low 40s in the northern Illinois. This is state climatologist Jim Angel.
For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Farmers across Illinois will soon need to scout their cornfields for the black cutworm. Black cutworm moths ride the southerly winds into the state of Illinois and then lay their eggs in cornfields. The hatch larvae then feed on the stem of the seedling plants, sometimes the leaves. They eat all the way through it, cutting it off. That's why it's important to monitor black cutworm moth flights into the state using traps, says entomologist Kelly Estes from the Illinois Natural History Survey.
We've had reports of significant moth flights, which is more than 8 moths over the course of a 2-day span. And what that indicates for us is a biofix. And from that biofix, then we can use degree days to predict when black cutworm larvae may be in an area and large enough to cut those plants like you described earlier.
One cutworm can feed on as many as 4 corn plants up to 15 inches in height over its lifetime. They feed at night and burrow into the ground during the daylight hours. Conditions that favor black cutworm outbreaks include later tillage and planting dates, reduced or no-till fields, and or fields where large weed populations exist or were controlled late. Damage is likely to occur when weed hosts are destroyed and larvae begin feeding on corn. As small larvae feed on plant leaves, early cutworm feeding can be identified as small irregular holes in the leaves of corn plants. The larvae feed above ground for about the first quarter of their lives and until they are approximately 1/2 inch long. Estes is now projecting the earliest cutworm feeding will start May 9th in Madison County. That's near St. Louis. Her projections move north from there with the passage of time.
Say like I-72 across, with projected cutting dates of May 11th through May 15th. And then as we progress into the northern counties, like Warren or Grundy, even as far north as Lee County, projected cutting dates from May 17th through May 21st. So as we're seeing delayed planting in several areas across the state, we could potentially have smaller size corn coming up in those areas and right about that time where we're expecting to see larvae present.
Illinois farmers should begin to scout cornfields for black cutworm larvae now. They'll need to scout 5 locations in each field, looking at about 250 plants total. The cutworm is black to gray and about 1.5 inches long when fully grown and looks a little greasy. A post-emergence rescue treatment is needed when 3% of the plants are cut and larvae are still present. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. It's the 28th day of April. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Eric Snodgrass is here now from Agrible. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us. Boy, there's been an awful lot of rain. Can you tell me more about it?
You know, Todd, I think I'm going to choose to look on the brighter side of all of this rain. I know we got a lot of folks that are out of the fields, not getting any field work done, not getting any planting done right now because of all the rain we've had over the last few days. But let's look a little bit bigger picture. You see, the latest U.S. Drought Monitor update shows that we've really reduced drought in the middle part of the country. Over the last 2 months, we've seen a 2 to 3 class improvement in central United States drought. And essentially, we don't have drought really occupying much area at all of the Corn Belt or the central United States for the most part right now. In fact, for the whole of the United States, we're at our lowest drought level since 2000. And why I'm looking on the bright side of this is because this is going to be very, very good for later on this season. You know, there is the risk this summer of carrying a warm bias, but if we got enough moisture already in place in the soil, that's moisture that can be recycled later in the form of precipitation in thunderstorms later on this season. Basically, we've eliminated pre-season drought, but I know it's kept a lot of folks out of the field. So let's talk about this upcoming rain for the weekend. Our next big low-pressure system emerges this evening, but we're already seeing showers and storms and even some snow spreading across parts of Nebraska early in the morning on Friday. Now, talk about the Central Plains. We have had multiple days where the low temperatures early in the morning have been in the upper 20s and very low 30s below freezing. And this is having an impact on the wheat crop. In fact, we've already seen some movement in the price of wheat over the last few days, partly moved by the fact that they've been having some frost damage. And they're not done. As this next system, which I told you is forming there later on this evening in kind of the Oklahoma Panhandle area and Texas area, as that system pulls again to the north, it will wrap around the backside of it enough cool air to produce another round of frost threat and, like I said, even some more snow across the Central Plains as this system spirals its way up towards the Great Lakes. Well, for those out ahead of this thing, we're going to get some warm southerly flow, but it is going to be so full of moisture that we have enough moisture to produce some massive rainfall totals. We're going to see heavy rain spreading throughout the rest of the weekend. In fact, some of that air will destabilize enough that the Storm Prediction Center is watching for Arkansas, parts of Oklahoma, southern Missouri, southern Illinois, kind of western Kentucky and southern Indiana for the potential for some strong to severe storms. So there's a whole lot going on with this next system as it spreads on to the north and east. Now, one thing I have to bring up about it, though, is that there's some model discrepancy, some model inconsistencies on where the heaviest precipitation will be. For the last 3 or 4 days, most of the models have pointed at a lot of rain that's going to spread from far eastern Oklahoma right through central Missouri, kind of on a southwest to northeast track. So think like Joplin through St. Louis, and then that heavy rain is going to spread from basically St. Louis through the Champaign area. Well, one of our overnight models called the NAM model, one of our short-range models, I should say, came out and said, hey, maybe that heavier precipitation might move a little bit farther to the north. The NAM model is a little bit more progressive with the stronger flow out ahead of the system than the European model is, or the U.S. long-range model called the GFS. At this point, it's a little difficult for me to see which of these models is going to perform the best. All of them have heavy rain, so we're still going to be talking 1 to maybe 3 inches spreading across a huge section of the Corn Belt. But where that focused, where we might get 3+ inches of rain, well, the models right now are not in agreement. But let's talk about what happens beyond all of this. You know, when are we going to get a dry down? Well, what I like to do is I like to look at the performance of the GFS ensemble model. You see, we run that model multiple times, 20 separate times every time it's run, so that we can understand any sort of kind of discrepancies within the model itself. And this is what the ensemble's saying. I'm watching for around May 7th, 8th, or 9th for a ridge to build in the central United States. And that's exactly what we want to see building in the central United States at this point. Because of all of the rain that's coming in now, we're going to need something to help dry that back out and then also allow folks to get back in the field and get that field work done. So if that ridge does build in around May 7th, 8th, or 9th through the central part of the country, we get southerly winds and we get some warmer conditions. The warmth is great. That increases the evaporation rate. We get the southerly winds. That also increases the evaporation rate. We can dry some of that topsoil out. Now, it's not a guarantee, and I know it's more than a week away, but that's what I'm watching right now to see if we can get some sort of hope into drying things back out. But in the long run, we are looking at a very active pattern.
Oh, indeed it is. Hey, thanks so much, Eric. We appreciate you being with us for the day. That's Eric Snodgrass. He's with Agrible. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This has been the Closing Market Report.